Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So If you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. It's amazing. But everything in this world changes except God's basic laws. And his laws are unchangeable. They serve as an infallible guide to meet every crisis, every change in life. If we can rise sufficiently out of the rut into which any situation or circumstance has pushed us and apply the same basic laws to our particular situation as preceding generations have used, we'll find the same result. God's laws never change. Everything in this world changes except God's basic laws. For example, as a man thinketh, so is he. An understanding heart is the most precious of earthly possessions. Man is master of his mind, and hence master of all circumstances. These laws have always been basic. They're just as true now as 2,000 years ago, or even 5,000 years ago. God never abandons us, even though, as the 23rd Psalm so clearly assures us, we may walk in the valley of death. He provides the strength he knows is necessary for us whenever we need it. Such are fundamental laws which apply to every situation, terrifying or not. Everything in life has a purpose. We may wonder sometimes what purpose some misfortune can have, but every event has its role in the growth of the human soul. Sometimes the purpose is not revealed for years, or if we fail to exert the strength God gave us, perhaps is never known to us during our passage on earth. But nevertheless, everything that happens to each of us has its share in the growth of our soul. No matter how unpleasant any situation may appear, how far removed at first sight from any seeming possibility for good, this fact remains. What happens to each of us is part of the Creator's divine plan. And how we react is the privilege which God has given us. The way we react represents the freedom extended to each of us by God. No intelligent human can fail to take hope, watching the intricate mechanism of life, with each minute's experience fitting perfectly into the overall life pattern. A bee buzzes as her path crosses a little too closely our own. A bird chirps a cheery call to its mate. A spider spins its web. These phenomena, in fact, everything in life, have their particular reasons. When it rains in our lives, it is because we need the rain in order to enjoy the sunshine and reap rich harvests. The way we meet all these phenomena, the way we master life, is our liberty of choice, mercifully granted by the Creator. The effect of every cause depends upon our reaction. Our soul grows as we overcome the trials and appreciate life's beauties and happy interludes. Oh yes, we can give vent to hatred and intolerance or despair, or we can deny these emotions which blind us to love and beauty and truth. And then we may acquire understanding instead of always seeking to have others understand us. No man can antedate his experience or guess what faculty or feeling a new object shall unlock, any more than he can draw today the face of a person he shall see tomorrow for the first time. So wrote Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it's true, we're constantly learning new lessons. Often we find that what we have learned is that which we have failed to appreciate and to understand. Maturity often comes too late for us to profit by the lessons we should have learned earlier, but never too late for each of us to try to pass on to those who follow the lessons we finally understand. Life is a process of continual change and development as well as growth. But God's laws are never changing. To be happy, to make our lives satisfying, we must be flexible enough in mind and body and consciousness to accept changes when they come. Don't stubbornly resist all changes in your life and affairs. Make these changes yield the harvest of good that potentially lies in each one of us. This may be difficult, but let me tell you, you can do it if you will. You, as a matter of fact, and only you, can determine whether you are to be bowed down, crushed, steamrollered by the events of life, or overcome them and come out triumphant, a happy individual. That's your right if you apply God's basic laws. No matter how drastic changes in your life may seem, in your occupation, your place, or mode of living, in your surrounding or associations or activities, or anything that concerns you, good is in this change for you, if you search hard enough to find it and accept it and make it your own by your reaction, by your adaptation to this change. Scenes and times and circumstances all come and go, but God is eternal and unchanging. So is his law. His good is unfailing. What each of us needs is the deep personal conviction that this good exists in every circumstance. Then, no matter what may come, we can remain poised and serene, free from fear. When we are aware of and exercise the tremendous power of our minds to dominate circumstances, overcome obstacles and snags, a peaceful, contented, and satisfying life is within our grasp. You know, actually, we're really not alive except when fighting the perils that threaten the mind and soul. Life is a challenge, a wonderful challenge, a wonderful adventure. When there is no struggle, life degenerates into vegetable-like existence, inert, torpid, and decadent. It is the challenge of peril, physical, mental, or spiritual, that makes life vigorous and can make it triumphant. There are inevitable moments of our lives when a storm is as certain and as necessary as storms in the skies. There are other moments in which life's elements combine to give us a serene, perfect moment, when sun and temperature make the day electrically beautiful. We cannot prevent these extreme highs and lows that temper our soul, make them grow. We can only do our best and never relax our faith in God's mercy. Whatever experiences we meet on life's course, in order for our minds and souls to attain maximum growth, we must always hold firmly in mind life's basic analysis. And what is this? Well, life is composed of two parts. Keep this always in mind. Life is composed of two parts. The first part, beyond our individual control. Events, circumstances, situations, problems. The second part, the part we can control, our reaction. The experiences we cannot control in no way prevent or limit our choice of reaction to these same experiences. Thus, in the end, our reactions, the second part of life, is much more important than any experience or situation or problem. Imagine an ocean dotted with coral islands, some small and some large, and washed by rising and outgoing tides. There you see a graphic illustration of our lives. The islands are the experiences we cannot avoid, the situations which sweep us away with joy or with sorrow, with happiness or anxiety. Before any man's life story is fully written, he must move from many of these coral islands to others. We cannot choose our individual islands of experience, but like the tide that flows against them, we can roll triumphantly over the coral rock, or we can break in many pieces. The way we move from one island of experience to another is ours to choose. Destiny provides the experiences we meet. We exert our own reactions. Do we wonder why life appears difficult at times? Do we wonder why there exists such reckless disregard for God's laws? Do we wonder why what seems evil appears to rage rampant in the world? We need not and should not be disheartened. There is no living thing in the world, plant or tree, fish or fowl, protoplasm or human being, without a place, a particular place, in the Creator's perfect plan. It is not necessary for each big or little entity endowed with life to be conscious of its own mission. It is sufficient to know there is no life, no spark of life without a purpose, no death without its role in the drama of life. Study the physical body. The answers to life's spiritual and intellectual cycles are clearly shown each day for our enlightenment. The body's marvels show how clearly sorrow and joy, pain and pleasure transform into part of a picture of growth. We begin our life in strife and struggle as we are born, and these conflicts continue until physical death. So sometimes you may feel that your load in life is too heavy for you to carry, that it is weightier than your strength and endurance can bear. Readjust your thinking. The strange thing about your load is it doesn't really bear down on your shoulders. It actually lifts you upwards. Imagine a load which lifts you upward. The life without a load is a life that goes down in defeat. Hear the fable of the small boy who read the story of Atlas, the titan who carried the world on his shoulders. The little boy imagined at first that Atlas must have been almost crushed under the weight of the world. But later the youngster began to think in terms of Atlas's enormous strength. Only then did he begin to see that heavy loads must be wings that lift instead of crushing burdens. The small boy perhaps did not realize it, but growth was taking place within him. Soon the conscious physical reaction of the boy to his thought processes had him lifting the biggest stones he could find and carry. He tugged at paving stones and heavy wooden blocks, simply to pit his strength against them. And just like the boy, as we go through life, we learn no one can be really happy unless he carries a load. A human being fully lives only as he lifts. Friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Eaton. This is UBC, the
All right, today we're going to, our topic is Earth Wealth E-Village, a zero light bill community. And we're going to come back and explain what all that means. Earth Wealth E-Village, and I've mentioned this briefly before, but we're semi-going official today. But Earth Wealth E-Village, what is it? Where is it? What is a zero light bill community? 619-768-2945. We'll be right back to answer those questions after this.
Thank you. Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She get hit you in your face. She a dude.
That bitch good, nigga.
Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga, kid, that nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
Had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity, and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
It ain't like stepping on ants, Jake. It takes a man to kill. Are you man enough to kill, Jake? Hit me right there. Get me, Jack. Get me. Hit me. Hit me. You can't do it. Somebody drop this fool for me.
You got us twisted, homie. We gotta put your own work in around here.
It's like that, Bone?
It's like that.
Player to player, pimp to pimp. I'm believe you shoot me, nigga. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now I'm believe he got it in you, Jake. I'm going to get that gun, and then I'm going to get that money. And you ain't going to do a damn thing, because you ain't going to shoot no cop in the back, are you?
Don't do it.
You know what they give you for that? The gas chamber. You know what the gas chamber smells like? Pine oil. That's where you headed, boy, to pine oil heaven. I'm going to get that gun, and then I'm going to get that money. I don't believe you got it in you, Jake. I'm going to go get it right now.
Oh, shit! You motherfucker!
The next one will kill you.
Oh, son of a bitch! You shot me in the ass!
Okay, wait. Okay. All right, listen. Wait, Jake, I need the money. Give me the money, Jake. Give me the money, please, Jake.
Give me that money!
It's not gonna happen. Oh, you gonna jack me now? You gonna take my own money from me, huh?
I told you, that's my evidence. You wanna go to jail, you wanna go home.
I wanna go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home.
Yeah? Yeah. You want to go home?
Yeah, let me go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home. Give me the money and let me go home. Let me go home, Jake. That's right. Come on, Jake. You don't deserve this. Okay, you motherfucker.
check. Go ahead and bounce, homie. Get up out of here. We got your back.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk.
Jay! I need my money! Jay!
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jay! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
In 1986, when the Chernobyl disaster sent radioactive clouds all over Europe, we knew we had to do something against nuclear energy. Many parents were really concerned about their children, and so some of us formed a group named Parents for a Nuclear Free Future. We began to educate ourselves in how to save energy. We started in our own home, and then we tried to motivate others to do the same. We wanted the energy company to support us, but they told us no, because we want to sell energy and not to save energy. And so one day we had the idea to take over the grid.
Citizens could generate their own power from solar, hydro, and wind.
Small producers are paid when they feed their electricity into the grid. Consumers are rewarded when they save energy.
So then there was only one question. How do we get the power grid? When the election came up to decide who controls the grid, we knew it was now or never. EWS, the Shunau Electrical Power Company, held two citizen referendums and won them both.
The power company said, well, you have the votes, but we have the grid, and we want 9 million Dutch mark, and either you pay it or we don't give you the grid. So we had a campaign asking people to help us raising this money.
It took EWS 7 long years to purchase the electrical grid.
This power company was afraid that this was the beginning of a movement, and it was.
Under Ursula's plan, homeowners have small power plants called cogenerators. EWS is now collectively owned by more than 1,000 citizens.
A year after we had taken the grid, the German electricity market was deregulated. Every person could buy electricity from the company he had chosen. And that is the idea of renewable power, because it's decentralized.
This is grassroots at its best. More than 100,000 people now have the electric current from this very small city, and they are very proud of it.
We want to have 100% renewable energy in 2050. All studies say It is possible to do that, and so we will do it.
For outstanding environmental achievement in Europe, the 2011 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Ursula Sladek, Schönau, Germany.
I had to open up my mic. I started to talk with the mic closed. All right, today's podcast is titled Earth Wealth E-Village, a Zero Light Bill Community. So exactly what is Earth Wealth E-Village? Well, it stands for Earth Wealth Energy Village. And if you're on Blog Talk Radio, you look at our scrolling marquee for today's live stream podcast, I've got some pictures of it. One's an aerial view of it. We have 4 acres. And then I didn't take that picture, but the rest of the pictures I did take, and those are ground level pictures of what it looks like right now, Earth Wealth E-Village. And I've explained on here what that meant, but for new listeners, I'll explain what it is again. It's a zero light bill community, and basically the inspiration for this project or community, depends on how you look at it, was inspired by people like Ursula Sladek, which Schönau, which is a little small village in Germany. And I basically, because I got introduced to renewable energy, solar, wind, biofuels, sustainable living, composting, and a whole bunch of more stuff, dual flush toilets, tankless hot water. I got introduced to all that stuff over in Germany. So there's another community. I call it a little village that's not too far from where Sladek is. And what's interesting about the Ursula Sladek story, her and her husband, and they briefly mentioned it in audio I just played, there was a nuclear power plant right near their village in Germany, and they didn't want it there. So Ursula and her husband, and maybe barely a handful of other neighbors, maybe three or four, five at best to start, they started meeting at the little local pub right in Schönau in southwest Germany. And as you heard on there, after they got a plan together and did their research, it took them 7 years, but they bought out the nuclear power plant, shut it down, and now their whole village is off to its solar. So now, and there are other places in Germany like that. There's another town not too far from Berlin, Germany, Feldheim, Germany, which that town runs, it's completely off. It's renewable. I haven't set foot in Schönau, and I'll get them up. But I've got videos that I took from when I was over there. But Earth Wealth E-Village is basically inspired by another village. And I'll post the videos on there by tomorrow on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV. If you go to It's My House TV, I've got some pictures of Earth Wealth E-Village, and that's located in Hamilton County, Florida, which is in the northern part of the state, 90 miles from Jacksonville, about 29, 30 miles away from Valdosta, Georgia, and maybe about two and a half hours, something like that. It might be 3 hours, but 2+ hours away from Orlando, Florida, Disney World, and maybe an hour or so change from Tallahassee. like I say, it's in the northern part of the state, not in the panhandle part, but in the northern part. But the panhandle might start maybe two or three counties west. But in any event, so that's where Earth Wealth E-Village is, and the pictures that are on posted on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV. We have the pictures. If it's not at the right, at the top of the page, just scroll down and you'll see. I got about maybe 5 to 7 pictures of it, and the scrolling marquee is on that. So that's what it looks like now. But that village, I'm calling it a village because it's only four acres. Based on what I saw, boots on the ground with my own eyes, several times over a 5-year period of time in Germany myself. And they have small little villages over there called Dorf, D-O-R-F. And if you look up the word Dorf in German, that essentially means small village. So the smallest of Dorf that I saw were, they had maybe about 4 households. That's it. All right, so you got a lot of those probably in scattered throughout Europe. But where I first saw a Dorf was in, now there's one particular community that really inspired what we'll be doing with Earth Wealth E-Village, as well as other projects that we have going on. This is the first patch, and it's the closest one to me. I'm 3 hours away from it physically right now. So, if I left the house right now, it'd take me 3 hours to get there, do what I had to do. I can go do what I could do and come back in a day. But it's in the same state where I'm at right now. So we have patches of land in other locations, but right now for this year, here's where we're at. So it was inspired by the Dorf that I saw in Germany. And there's another community that it's called Vauban, V-A-U-B-A-N, or some people pronounce it Vauba. It's physically in Germany. It's a district within the town of Freiburg, Germany. And it's right on the edge of the Schwarzwald. And Schwarzwald is Deutsch, the German language. Translate the name Schwarzwald in German to English, Black Forest. So Vauban is right on the edge of the Black Forest, which is one of the 7 natural wonders of the world. Spectacular. I mean, it's a huge forest, but that's another podcast. So Vauban, I spent the day in Vauban, and by Friday I'll post pictures of, I've got video. I have video of Vauban, and I have video of the Black Forest. It's a massive place, so there's no way you can. I'll let you know when I have it on the board this week. But in any event, Vauban, as you pull into, first thing, no gas-powered cars can enter Vauban. That's number one. So we had to park. You had 2 options. There was a grocery store where you can park your car, or they have I'll post the videos of it this week on It's My House TV. They have a huge, I'll put it that way, that's a better word, a large solar garage. So if you're driving a gas-powered car, you're parking in a solar garage. Now, Vauban, it's a community, 5,000 or 6,000 people. And like I said, it's physically located in Germany, but it's not too far from France. So you got a community of people that speak Deutsch as well as French in this community. And the only motor vehicle that you might see in Vaumont would be, you might occasionally see and hear an electric vehicle, also known as an EV. But there are no gas-powered cars that are allowed in. All gas-powered cars have to park in the solar garage, and that's totally lit and powered with solar panels. Or the well, I haven't been there in a while, but when I was there, parking the grocery store. And so people get around, but people mostly get around in Vaumont primarily by foot or bike. And their community is set up for bikers. And, the streets are kind of narrow and whatnot, but it works. So this is an off-the-grid community. You have a lot of the households that grow their own food. There is an organic grocery store right on the edge of Vaumont, but you do have people. A lot of people do. They do grow their own food. They get together once a week, neighborhood by neighborhood, and they break bread. They have lunch and dinners and meals with other neighbors in their particular sub-community of Vaumont. I'll do a podcast dedicated towards that, but by Friday I'll load up videos that I personally took while I was at that location. So Earth Wealth Energy Village is inspired to a high degree of the time I spent in Vaumont and Germany and Austria. I spent the bulk of the time in Germany. So achievement number one was, it's 6 years now, I was able to get to 4 years with no investor money because I didn't want to deal with any squabbling. So, and I haven't had any because it's just me. So now we're going into phase one. And phase one is, because I'm living by a mantra that me and Robin practically say every day, start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. And that's how I got to 4 acres in the first place. I started where I was. I hired an Uber driver for the day. And I looked at several properties that day and ran across that 4 acres. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with it at the time, but now I do. So phase one of this, the last thing is do what you can. So I've had recently, within the last it's about knocking at the door of a month. While I was not looking I have a broad definition of mobile homes. But I wasn't looking to do, I wasn't looking at trailers, campers, RVs, or nothing like that. I wasn't thinking about parking or anything like that. But people contacted me unsolicited that they needed a place to park their camper or RV. So I met with one, and now I've got a source of income from just parking. That's it. So keeping in line with, because most people are, particularly when you deal with a vision, it's seeing is believing. But from where I'm at is you have to see it when it's not visible yet. So what's visible is the 4 acres. So the next thing is phase one is I'll make it available to probably about no more than four or five mobile homes based on my definition of mobile homes. Because I do not have the traditional definition of mobile homes. It's my definition is broader. So, to get it going, it's already going, but the first phase is, you know, I'll open it up to 3 to no more than 5 people that want to park there. That's it. And it could be RV, because now I've got some experience with, you know, people that want to pay for parking. Or if it's a camper or trailer, and one day we're going to go through the distinctions on those, you know, what are the distinctions between a camper, trailer, RV, fifth wheel, single wide, double wide, because most times when people bring up the topic of mobile homes, they're talking about a single wide or double wide. But, like, once again, my definition of mobile home is broader than single or double wide. So, anyway, so that'll be phase one, which we'll be marketing for that today. We ran some tests based on before, so pretty good results, but now I'm ready to, meet people and assign them a parking area. So that'll be phase one, okay? By the end of this month, because it's November the 3rd, 2021, by the end of this month, we might be going into phase two. I don't know. But right now, phase one will be marketing for people for parking only. And they've got to fit the guidelines that we have. They've got to be self-contained. They have to be self-contained. All right. And like I said, we have to be more visual with this, so you'll know what I mean by self-contained. We shall be having workshops/retreats from that location too. Now I had to get together with a few people and powwow over that, because part of that can be done online, but the other, and that's just the intro stuff dealing with the safety and what's to be expected and you know what to expect. And then the other part will be actual boots on the ground. So it won't be for everybody. It's for the pioneer, okay? Because one of the things that with Earth Wealth Energy Village, and I got this from a volunteer project that I did with the United States Department of Energy, which we mentioned this last week on, or at least the week before last on the podcast, the solar decathlon, when they had it in Washington, D.C., and I imagine they're like this anywhere they go. But from my hands-on experience with it, like once again for people that didn't hear, they set up a solar village, and a solar village basically was made up of 19 to 21 off-the-grid homes. Most of you might classify these homes as tiny homes. I would classify them, most of them, as probably small homes. They weren't quite, because my definition of tiny is smaller than what they had to solar caravan, but most of them were small homes. And they all ran off of sunlight, solar energy. And the decathlon, the Soldier Decathlon, is a contest between these universities. And their homes had to function like a regular brick-and-mortar stick-built house, just using solar energy. And I volunteered for that and learned a lot in the three times I did it. I volunteered for it. And some of those times, there was overcast for some days. But the houses had to, the light, it couldn't tap into the local power grid, which includes water. They had no municipal water, no electricity from Pepco, which is a local power company in Washington, D.C., and they couldn't heat up or do anything using natural gas, which is Washington Gas in Washington, D.C. Everything had to be powered by the sun. I witnessed it with my own eyes, because the decathlon was probably like a 21 to 25-day event from start to finish. But here's the thing that I want to talk about right now, this aspect of it. When they left, they had, now imagine a village, 19 to 21 homes. When they left, and it also served as an exhibit for people coming to D.C. When they left, to leave it better than what they came, what it was like before they came on to Washington Mall, they left without a trace. When they left, you can never tell that there was an actual solar village made up of 19 to 20 off-the-grid homes where they washed clothes, washed dishes, shower, everything that you do that you power with electricity or whatever kind of power or combination of powers that you use in your home with electric, gas, water, they did everything with solar. And I'm an eyewitness of that times three. Vauban, the community of Vauban, which is in Germany, they have a different layout because a lot of their layout is basically apartments or condos. That's how a lot of those households roll. But they're essentially, and they're permanent. Where the solar decathlon is like a nomad type thing with colleges and universities around the world. But Vauban is a real life where people are not getting electric bills. So Earth Wealth E-Village is a zero light bill community. That's what it is. I would like to call it a solar village. But more people, more grassroots people, they're familiar with a light bill. They know what a light bill is. And as people get used to that term in our little small little microcosm of the universe, they'll understand that a zero light bill community is where no household receives an electric bill. No household receives a water bill. And no household receives a heating bill from an outside company or source. Now, we're going to have to educate people on this because it you can have your own independent system. And this really isn't new. It isn't new at all, but it's a wide open opportunity for the entire Western Hemisphere. Even in Europe, even in Germany, where I first learned this stuff, a lot of people, most people are still on the grid. So I'm not trying to change the world with this, but this community, okay, and this is our first one. And like I said, phase one is we're ready for parking right now. Okay. And this will be more of the hardcore campers, to be honest about it. It's a semi-remote location, but it's about 10 or 15 minutes away from a state park where there's got, I mean, natural springs, a lot of activities. If you want to go to Walmart, there's one not too far away if you want Chinese food, not too far away if you want to go grocery shopping. But in this little thing, it's where we are, Earth Wealth E-Village, it's a get-away-from-it-all place. And phase one is parking. That's what we can do right now. And then we'll take the money from the parking and then start working more on infrastructure. And that's where we'll be having workshops and retreats. You know, to go from phase one to phase two to how many phases it might take. But right now, we're ready for phase one. But in any event, you'll be able to, you can get an internet connection at Earth Wealth E-Village as well. So you can work there because remote schooling, remote working at a job or business, that's nothing new now. That's nothing newfangled. People have socially accepted the idea globally. Okay. So if you got a smartphone, you're good to go. You got a tablet, you're good to go. You got a laptop, you are good to go. All right. It's called Earth Wealth Energy Village. For people who haven't heard me explain the name before, it's because, and once again, if you look at the pictures, okay, it's because some people might look at the picture, the aerial view or the ground view, and, you know, they don't see much. They see trees. You see a dirt road. But the place is super abundant earth wealth. Operative word here, wealth. And what I love about Earth Wealth is the average person doesn't, in plain sight, doesn't even recognize they're standing in the abundance of wealth. That can be converted into money. Now, we're not taking down any trees a la the solar decathlon. Once again, what you see, we're working around what the universe or what Earth has given us. We're building infrastructure around what's already there, just like the solar decathlon, okay? And some of the wealth that is there, because the place is loaded full of biofuels. Now, biofuels is anything that has been created by the biofuels is some examples of dead leaves, branches that have fallen from the trees that are on the ground. Those are the raw materials of biofuels. If we need to heat up our places, which we will because that part of Florida does have a cold snap every year, and we can ground up and compress those dead leaves, those tree branches, into biofuels to heat our homes. We don't need a local power company for natural gas. We don't need a local power for electricity. The place is flooded with it. Thus, Earth Wealth Energy. But there's another form of Earth Wealth there. We can also drill for wells there, I mean for water wells, because the place is sitting on literally an ocean of water. More earth wealth. And that's all, and we can legally do that. I legally do it where I'm at. And I'm in Florida. I'm just 3 hours away from there. rain on a typical household roof over 41,000, between 41,000 and 42,000 liters of water hits the typical roof here in the United States. And you can harness that water. If you don't know how to harness it, the rainwater, then it'll go through the sewer system as storm water, and the city will clean it up, and then they'll sell it back. They're selling you your own water back. They call it municipal. So we don't need that there because we have another source, wealthy source. There's no shortage of rainwater throughout the whole state of Florida. So that's another reason why we call this place Earth Wealth E-Village, and they're all forms of energy. And then, although it's wooded, they're spots, natural cleared spots all throughout the 4 acres that we can set up. You can set up an individual home, or you can set up your own solar power station. There's enough daylight sunlight that comes through there where we can power cell phones, televisions. There's got to be the right voltage. But like I said, that's where we have an educational, you know, if you want your TV, your flat screen and all this, you can have all that. But it's got to be a certain voltage, and you can't be wasting energy. So this is all part of Earth Wealth E-Village. So that's why we call it Earth Wealth. We've got some merch on it. I've been wearing Earth Wealth Energy baseball hats, T-shirts, polo shirts, and hoodies for the last 3 years or so. But we're not selling that. So right now, say phase one, that's where we're at for the first week of November 2021. Okay, next week we might have something added on for you. I don't know. By the end of the month, we might start phase two. I don't know. But right now, November 3rd, we're only looking for between three to no more than five people to park. That's it. There's a market out there, and it's not too far from I-10 or I-75. It's a nice little. Eventually, we're going to make it into. I'm going to find some people that are artists, and we're going to make it into one of these little cool chill out spaces. That's not my lane, but we'll get some people who know how to put that together. Let's see. Now, one idea that I came across last night. And anything that we're doing with this, we're encouraging you to do the same thing. Okay, because one of the reasons we're going to have several workshops is. I want to encourage people to buy land and develop it according to your vision, because it can be a problem solver. Let me give an example of an idea that I got like that last night. I was on an Instagram chat. And they were talking about mobile homes. And that's one of the things that we'll be talking about, because, once again, I have a broader definition than your hardcore mobile homers do. It's a broader definition of what they have. But one idea that can solve problems using land, and it doesn't have to be 4 acres, is this lady she has a mobile home. It's got to be a double wide. at least a double wide. If they have anything bigger, it might be that. But she's got a double wide. And she rents out 5 rooms in this mobile home. She charges $650 per month per bedroom in this mobile home. I forgot how much she picked it up. Maybe she picked it up for maybe $1,500 or something like that. It was a low amount of money that she picked it up for. Put a little money in it. But what I got from that was, okay, I've already got the space. Okay. So, I mean, multiply, you people out there with your calculators, or you can figure it out in your head, multiply $650 times 5. Now, that amount of money could be used to solve some problems in your life. If you're a guy or a woman and you're on child support, see, some of the workshops that we're going to have will be based around solving problems. You have a lot of people that are locked up right now because they're not making enough to pay child support. So one of the workshops that we're going to have is how you can set yourself up, how you can create an asset, how you can create an asset that will take care of your child support. So in this case, okay, now she and her husband, you know, that's just part of their, you know, monthly cash flow or whatever they, you know, I don't know their lifestyle, nothing like that. But in this example, I'm looking at, okay, well, you know what, together or teach people at Earth Wealth eVillage, one of the workshops that we'll have, and we're going to, I guarantee we'll have dates set for this before the end of this month on this one. How to pay child support and how to get the land, where to get the land, all right, regardless of credit, and, you know, what kind of building are you going to put on it? Okay, if you want to, because now with this, we're going to have a landlording part too. Because if you never own any rental property, you need to be educated and you need to be part of a support group with other real-life landlords to guide you through that. Because landlording is not for the tenant. Okay. So anyway, you get, in the case that I heard last night, she got at least a double-wide mobile home, put a little money up to get it fixed up, and she gets $650 a month rent off of each room. I got a feeling that might be Section 8 people. I don't know. I got to do more. I got to pick her brain on that. But $3,250, if you got a child support issue, if you have a mortgage issue, if you have a debt that you want to pay off issue, student loan, you want to stack some money or whatever, that is a good strategy to get you a patch of land in a rural location and put a mobile home on it or build you a cabin and rent it out where you can use it as income. You can do Airbnb, Vrbo, there's a whole bunch of them, or not deal with any of them and just do your own thing. So we'll have workshops or retreats at Earth Wealth eVillage for that. Now, by the end of this month, because it's November 3rd right now, 2021, we'll start announcing dates for that. But for today, okay, all we're concerned with is parking, because we're going to look at, three to no more than five, and then we'll have them in a small area of the, you know, I'll probably use no more than about a half acre at best. I don't want, you know, I don't want them on top of each other. I want them spread out so they have their privacy. And the way we have it right now is we can spread them out over the 5 acres. But anyway, that's phase. That, you know what? I just announced phase two. That's phase one, the parking. That's what we're doing today. Phase two is by the end of this month is we'll start announcing the workshops, the province, how you can use land to solve various financial problems. That's phase two. And you know what I said by the end of the month? You know what? I'm going to keep it like that. By the end of the month, we'll start announcing dates on that. But so that's phase one and phase two for Earth Wealth Energy Village as of today, November 3rd. Yeah, 2021. And let's see. People, I took a, what did I take? I'm fighting sleep here, and I get up early on in the first place. And my mind's going blank here. Wait a minute, I'm trying to stay with you. Okay. and my board's sticking here. But in any event, all right, so you got a little bit backstory on Earth Wealth E-Village, and the E stands for energy. It can also stand for e-commerce, because we'll be doing e-commerce from there, too. And another topic is it's an intentional community. And let me see if I can get a definition for you, intentional community. Well, just off the top of my head, common sense. And that's why we say Earth Wealth E-Village is a zero light bill community. Anybody who wants to legally eliminate the electric bills in their life, the municipal water bills in their life, and the gas bill in their life, because it's November now, so in places like Chicago, Cleveland, Boston, Washington State, like Seattle, it's starting to get cold. I mean, the temperatures are dropping at night. I'm sure in a few places, the furnace has kicked on already. Some of you that are in these colder climates, by Christmas, or definitely by the end of the year, you or somebody that you know is going to have a heating bill that's going to be over $1,000. And in certain cities like Washington, D.C., you know, there's a law there. Well, you know, they can't cut you. If you made it by Thanksgiving or somewhere around there in D.C., Washington Gas can't cut off your gas. and you keep on using it, and that bill keeps on stacking. And then when the weather gets, because March will be here, it's November now, but March will be here sooner than a lot of people think. And then they're going to be shutting that, they'll be shutting you down. But for people that, if you, once again, Earth Wealth eVillage is an intentional community for people that want zero light bills, zero water bills, zero heating bills. Point blank. I'm looking up the definition of intentional community, and there are different type of intentional communities. But I'm reading here on Wikipedia. An intentional community is a voluntary residential community designed from the start to have a high degree of social cohesion and teamwork. And you know what? I'll get into this more of intentional, because there are different type of intentional communities. But the intentional communities that I'm looking at, which Earth Wealth eVillage is, and now, mind you, we could tap into the grid, but we're not. I don't want anything to do and anybody that's going to be visiting when you visit, or some people might end up being residents of Earth Wealth eVillage. The common denominator is our bond. Okay, the commonality that we all have is we do not want to see an electric bill, a municipal water bill, or any natural gas bill to heat up our homes. We're in an abundance, at least at Earth Wealth Energy. It might not be on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, New York, but at Earth Wealth Energy, we are living in a Garden of Eden, richly blessed with earth wealth. We can also grow our own food there, and we can also sell it. We can also set up our own farmer's market, and I got that straight from the horse's mouth, because I'm in contact with the zoning and permits people. That only pertains to what we grow on our own 4 acres. Now, if we bring somebody in outside the 4 acres and they want to be part of our farmer's market, then a permit has to be pulled for that. And I call that very reasonable. But right now, we're good. And, you know, we're going to have a conversation maybe later this week. You know what, maybe even tomorrow on zoning, I got to get a guy in to talk about that. I was having a power with a friend of mine in the DMV up in the D.C. area yesterday. And he was telling me, and this is another reason why we're right where we are with Earth Wealth eVillage. A lady wanted a tree cut down at her house in Washington, D.C. Well, long story short, in Washington, D.C., you have to get a permit to cut a tree down. Okay. All right. Well, in theory, fair enough. All right. But this is what I call not fair enough. In Washington, D.C., for this particular tree, which was in a residence, it still might be standing. To pull the permit, before I get to how much it costs for to pull a permit to chop down a dead tree on a residential property in Washington, D.C., at least in this case, the contractor that was going to cut down the tree, his fee is $2,500. Okay. You can probably get it lower than that, but for right now, for the sake of conversation, you know, it, let's say it was a big tree. All right, $2,500, let's say, fair enough. Fair enough. You might want to do a little bit more shopping, but you're not going to get it. Cutting down trees is not cheap. Now, here's what Washington, D.C. permit fee for chopping down this tree. And I hope most of you are sitting down when I give you this number. If you're driving, I would advise you to pull over. I'll give you 5 seconds. Pull over. 5, 4, 3. Pull over now. 2, 1. Pull over. Cut the car off. The puller permit. Now, mind you, once again, the contractor who's doing the work is charging $2,500. Okay. Once again, I'm saying fair enough for the contractor. Because more than likely, he's not going to do it alone. He's going to need help. They need some equipment, which they have. So $2,500 for the tree contractor, fair enough. To pull a permit for this particular tree in Washington, D.C., $7,500. $7,500 to pull a permit. And you know, and this is just one reason why, in my opinion, Washington, D.C. is no longer Chocolate City. Because the average person, the average homeowner across the United States, now there's several neighborhoods, Beverly Hills, they can afford that. Many neighborhoods in San Francisco, they can afford that. But on a critical mass basis in the United States, you know, including most of Appalachia and most of black households, actually most of any kind of household, regardless of race or color, can't afford a $7,500 permit fee to chop down a tree. They might have the $2,500 to pay the contractor. That's why I said fair enough. So a lot of you guys that live in a place like D.C. or whatever, oh, but you know what? This is why the way we're reframing and we're having special retreats and workshops. Okay, well, use the strategy of going out to driving an hour outside of D.C., driving an hour outside of Chicago, driving an hour or maybe 2 hours outside of New York City to a rural area, get you some inexpensive land, and do like this person that put a double-wide mobile home and then rent out the rooms, and then, okay, if you put three or four, let's say you do that times two, and $3,250, you got two properties that bring you in $3,250 each. All right, times two. Well, let's just go to times three. Okay, then you're taking in $9,750 a month. All right, then you're making more than that off of these three properties on an acre, or let's say no more than 2 acres worth of land. Then, and that's what I'm doing, because I basically have to go outside of D.C. to solve the problems inside of D.C. Because D.C. has no rural land. There's no rural land in D.C. There's no such thing as a mobile home in D.C. Even with the tiny house they have in D.C., they're exhibits. But D.C.'s not the only place like that. I mean, you go to parts of most of Baltimore, Boston, New York City, Miami, Chicago. There's a lot of cities that you've got to go outside, rural, and you got to come up with a financial strategy that you can do legally in one place and make your money in that one particular place or places, and then come back in to to generate the money that you need to solve inside the city. Matter of fact, tomorrow, the guy that told me about this, I'm going to see if I can get him on his podcast. And what we'll do is, what we're going to do is, we're going to take big city problems, you know, like, you know, if the city is asking $7,500 to pull a permit for cutting down a tree, or you got something dealing with code enforcement that you got to pay a fine on, but you don't have the money. What we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to go through some typical problems that occur in some of your largest cities. And then what we can do, how we can use the rural land strategy to solve those problems. All right. And I'm sure by the end of tomorrow's podcast, we're going to add those solutions into our phase two. Okay. People, we usually go 2 hours. I'm cutting it by 3 minutes a day. I got a headache. Benadryl's kicking me in the tail. So I'm fighting sleep. So I'm going to end it for today. But tomorrow we're going to come back and pick up from today with the $7,500 permit fee. And then what can we do? What can we do to earn that kind of money and pay it with no problem?